Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I am Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamond.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
Well, how are you today, Rob?
Today, Russell, is a momentous day for the podcast because pretty much since we founded this podcast, we've been planning on interviewing today's guest. And I am feeling like a pioneer because a pioneer is the only way to describe today's guest, as well as groundbreaking and pretty much essential, and also incredibly influential, because pretty much every artist we know, especially if they're queer and have, you know, been making paintings in the last decade or photography in the last, I don't know, four decades, has been incredibly inspired by today's guest, without doubt, without question. And we are speaking to him today from New York City, and it's actually just been his 91st birthday. So happy birthday to our guest. Over the last, I think, like more than 60 years, our guest has been making art, and predominantly through photography, but more recently through short films. And I think there's some crazy number of short films since 2015. It's something like over 40 or so, or 50 maybe, short films that he's made since 2015, and they are amazing. And if you do not know today's guest, you should, and you can buy some amazing monographs, but you can also explore online. But I'm so proud and so thrilled to welcome to Talk Art the one and only Dwayne Michaels.
That would be me. Hi, thank you for that wonderful introduction.
No, thank you so much. It's. Are we allowed to say that you are the oldest ever, I was going to say contestant, the oldest ever guest on Talk Art at 91?
I'll take what's behind door number three. I love being old. This whole fart thing that everybody has a problem with age, if you do it the right way, it's fantastic. I have a great assistant named Josiah and another one named Tim. And we, every week we do something new that I've never done before. It's very exciting. I love it. I can't wait to see what I'm going to do this week or who I'm going to do this week.
So Dwayne, I was first introduced to your work by a dear friend of mine who's a photographer called Alyssa Cray, and she's currently the head of Tracy Emin's new art school in Margate. And her partner, Liz Collier, who's a documentary maker, they are both so inspired by your work, and particularly Alyssa. Like, she's been making work for maybe 20, 30 years now, maybe 20 years. And you are literally the DNA of why she started to pick up a camera. And what's that like? Because you must have so many different artists who come to you and say, like, you know, thank you, your work really inspired me.
Yeah, I don't pay much attention to it because I am literally only interested in what I'm doing today, this very moment. I love doing what I've never done before. I'm uncomfortable in my comfort zone. To do the same thing twice, I would find very depressing. Really, really, I like the possibility of failure and not knowing. And I have a number 27. You know, this week we're going to do a number 28. No, it's just you'll learn more from your. I learn more from my mistakes than my apparent whatever. Blah, blah, blah.
Successes. Yeah. So how do you, I mean, you sound like you are still incredibly ambitious, and do you feel like you've made your best work today, or you feel like tomorrow you might suddenly uncover something?
Not at all. I haven't made my best work. I can't wait. The next thing I'm going to do is my best work. I don't turn out a commodity. I turn out an idea. I thrive on, I have no intellectual fat or ambition. Of course I have ambition, but there are people who are Mr. Ambition, Andy Warhol ambition. I mean, that when the ambition is, you could touch it, it's palpable, it fills the room. That gets in the way. There's a wonderful book I highly recommend called Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind. And the idea is one must always be the beginner, because when you do something for the first time, you give it great attention. And so if you're going to bake a cake, or, you know, you're Julia Child's, and you half a cup of flour and then, ooh, 3/4 a cup of salt, what the hell, you know. And then after you do it a while, you just start throwing it in and, you know, you make it up. You make everything up as you go along, you know.
Well, I love that about you. And I think there's an incredible quote that I've read of yours where it's, you say, pay attention while you're here. It's all going to go away just like yesterday did.
When I say this is now, it's not now. The very essence of what we are. And you know what else? I'll tell you a secret just between us. The Webb telescope has completely destroyed me. The Webb telescope is just, you know, there are more galaxies and then there are grains of sand on our planet. I mean, do the math. I mean, it's just, I like magic. I like, boring is when people say, oh, that is so boring. No, you're fucking boring. Only boring people are bored. It's a matter of appetite and energy. I hate young fogies, you know.
Talking about magic and about illusions and about the unknown, that feels like something that when people come to your photography, there's series of works that really explore magic or explore spirituality or the unknown. And those are the works for me that have felt so exciting and fascinating and enthralling and fresh and very unique to you. When did you start wanting to explore the afterlife through your living photography?
Well, it's the whole package. I went to Russia when I was 26. I was working as a graphic designer at Time Inc., and the trip changed my life. I never went to photography school, thank God. You go to photography school, they've got to teach you something. What they teach you is the rules, so they teach you how to. And when I became a photographer, you could be Ansel Adams, great, Robert Frank, my hero. But that was the menu. And I'm not Robert Frank or Ansel Adams. Why should I look like them? And even when it gets to gay issues, you know, I just wouldn't. People say to me, they'll show me a picture, can I mention a name? By Bruce Weber, of a really, you know, beautiful guy. Wow. I said, what a beautiful photograph. I said, no, that's a beautiful guy. It's a very ordinary, straight. I said, if that was an ugly guy, would it be an ugly photograph? No. We are so dazzled, tricked into beauty.
Russia, this was a trip that you made that was a real career changing moment for you. Will you talk about that and why that sort of defined your career going forwards?
Yes, because I was interested in, I like painting, I like art. I was one of those kids who took art in grade school. And I went to art classes. I was very arty. I was very arty indeed. Oh, you're very arty. You know, I say, well, your name should be Art because you're arty. See, I do these things. I go off on tangents. So, and there I was in New York. The Buddhists say when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear. And going to Russia was my, I learned how to say in Russian, may I take your picture? So I asked Tom Lacey, I borrowed his Argus C3 and I wouldn't take a light meter. And here's my whole education, Tri-X. When you're out in a bright sun, write this down, you're going to forget. You put the thing on top, you put the thing in 16 and you do it on 500. When the clouds come over, same outside, you leave it on 16 and you put it on 60. Never mind. I'm not going to go there.
No. It's fascinating. But I'm really interested in why you said, fuck the light meter. Why that was something that you were like, I don't need a light meter.
No, because I thought there was a commitment. I would have to be a photographer. I couldn't fuck up. I couldn't take badly exposed pictures. There was responsibility. And I didn't want to be a photographer. I didn't want to do that. Changed my life was that I don't want to go into that whole story, but too much other things to talk about. But when I became a photographer, I thought, well, that's my secret of success. Write this down. My secret of success is you find something you love doing and get somebody to pay you to do it. I haven't worked in 60 years. And the thing is, I work both sides of the room. There are those photographers who are very successful fashion photographers and they do business, and they're art photographers. But I work both sides of the room. I've done Paris collections for Vogue. I've done Life covers. I've done Synchronicity. I've done Eskimos for Esquire magazine. And I mean, it's wonderful. And I never knew what I was doing. And the other side of the room is I didn't buy the rules. I didn't realize that I had to be Ansel Adams. I'm not Ansel Adams, and I'm much cuter than Bresson. So what should my photographs look like then? And also, I'm very verbal. I could do 10 minutes on any subject. Yeah, and I love to read.
I ask you then, just going back to Russia, what specifically was it that you saw or captured in Russia in photography that made you think this is where I want to be doing?
Yeah, get rid of the word captured. That's a terrible word. I photographed a lot of celebrities. I've never photographed you, either one of you, but I really have. And I never captured anything. You spend, half an hour in a room, a hotel bedroom with somebody, no avail. And, you don't capture anything. You get an interesting picture. And the thing is, I like portraits that don't show you what somebody particularly looks like, but it's the energy. For example, let me see. I was thinking, I photographed Magritte, of course. René Magritte. I'll tell you that story. When I was in 1960, I was looking at Harper's Bazaar, and I saw this amazing photograph. It was a nude woman, full page, and she's holding a mirror in front of her, and she's reflected in the mirror. That's impossible. She's behind the mirror. How could she be in the mirror? So that contradicted. See, I don't want people telling me what I already know. I know what sunsets look like, tits look like, cars look like. I don't want to know that. Tell me what I don't know. So I thought, how did he do that? And then I looked and I realized, that's not a photograph. It's a painting by somebody, Magritte. What the hell is that? And then, I've taken advantage of everything opportunity. So and then I knew a woman named Liz Lowenstein, and she went to in London with her. Her husband was studying with Lucian Freud. Lucian Freud? No.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
The old man. No, the old man.
Sigmund Freud.
Ziggy to you. And and she said, well, I know somebody who knows Magritte, and I thought, wow. I have a great friend, Fred. We were together for 57 years. We should talk about that. But anyway, so I went and I wrote him a letter and I went and I photographed him. But I took pictures in the manner of what he did. You know what I mean? For example, when I photographed, there's a wonderful comedian. He was on Kramer. What's his name? Anyway, I don't want to waste my time on names.
Kramer was the Seinfeld character, wasn't it? It was Michael Richards, I think.
Michael Richards, yes. So I didn't do a headshotter. I did him in the manner what Kramer does. So he's sitting there, and he's reading a book. There's a empty glass, and he's got a bottle of milk, And he's reading the book, and he's pouring the milk, but he's missing the glass. So the milk is going all over the table. That's what he does. That's shtick.
It's amazing.
Well, no, but
to
you photographed Magritte. That's so wild. Yeah, where did you photograph him?
You photographing artists as well seems to be a theme. Like you photographed René Magritte. You've obviously photographed Andy Warhol, Joseph Cornell, Jasper Johns.
You name them.
What is it like to photograph artists? What does give you?
It depends on the artist. I knew Andy rather well before he became Andy, when he was that Andy. Andy was the most boring person in the world. Here's a phone call from Andy Warhol. Ring, 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 ring. Hello, hello. Oh, hi, Dwayne. Oh, hi, Andy. Dwayne, what's new? That's Andy was a phone off the hook. And I mean, really, let's not talk about Andy. He's so bored. No, but let's talk about me. Let's talk about Magritte. Let's talk about Russia.
Yeah, so wait, tell me about Magritte. Where did you photograph
Magritte? We need to go back to Russia, actually. Go back to Russia, because I just want to know, what did you see in Russia that made you
Everything. See, I want to be contradicted. I want to be amazed. These are my tenets. I don't want to be told what I already know. So going to Russia, are you kidding? I took a train from Helsinki overnight to Leningrad in those days, got Leningrad about midnight, and there was this, it was like a 1930s movie, and there was this huge car, like Suiso car, you know, big car. And I'm sitting in the back seat with this woman who was a Marlene Dietrich lookalike. She, and there, at midnight, Leningrad, this old car, this fantastic woman. Wow, that's an adventure. See, I think you have to have adventures. I love having adventures. What else could I say?
Well, you came back from Russia and it changed.
I went to, I lived in a village in a little tenement, and I went around the corner to an old Italian man who had a little Italian store where they sold film and whatever. I gave him my film to process. I didn't know how to process film. What a nut job. And then the pictures were good. And, you know, I have good taste. This is not a person of good taste? Of course I am. Thank you for answering. So then that was tasteless. So then I went and I began to print these pictures. But my pictures were like Dead Sea Scrolls. And they rolled up. I didn't know how to flatten them. And here's the two big events of my life. Going to Russia changed my life. And I never throw parties. I'm not a party guy. And so somebody said, can I bring a friend? I said, sure. And so they brought this guy, and he was so bored, he was unrolling my photographs. And he said to me, these are good pictures. I'm a photographer. I have a studio. I never use it on weekends. I'll give you a key. And he did. So I went there every weekend. And little by little, I began to get more confidence. Are you lucky? I'm very lucky. I'm the lucky guy. Things, you know, other people get hit by a car. I take a picture of it. No, really. And I can't wait to find out what I'm popping my head next. Okay, so there I was. I got back and I thought, well, that's great. And I decided, I don't know why I did. I decided to take, I like to do portraits. That was the limit of my imagination. But they were good. They were really good. And then I went on from there. New York Times would call up. People would call up, and I'd say, yes, of course. Of course I'll do that. Can you photograph interiors? Yes, I photograph interiors. You've done them? Oh, yeah, I've done them. No, I didn't. I was lying through my nose. They make a lie through their teeth. Lies through your nose are very, when you're lying through your nose, it sounds like this. That's the time I'm lying through my nose. This is me lying. Yeah, I could do it. Yeah, I could do it. Anyway, it's packed.
Would I be right then in saying that the photographs that we see of Russia feel very street photography style, but from the rest of your career, most of your photography has been very set up. You set up scenarios, you create stories, and you tell narratives.
Yeah. Well, here's why. You want to hear why?
Yeah.
You know, I'm asking. You say yes. I say okay. Here's why. Because I don't know why. No, because I have this kind of imagination. Most photographers walk around the street with a camera looking for something to photograph. I don't. I sit in my living room and pay attention to my dirty thoughts. And although I do gay things all the time, I did a wonderful photograph. I would never be Mapplethorpe or body guy, but I did a photograph. It's about a guy, naked guy, and he's got his hands on the wall from the back, and he has shoes, like work boots on his hands. And it says, I wrote, "The unfortunate man could not touch the one he loved. It had been declared illegal by the law. So slowly his fingers became toes and his hands became feet. And he began to wear shoes on his hands to hide his shame. It never occurred to him to break the law." See, that's editorializing. It's about expression, and you're expanding the expression. And once I opened that door, I could do all kinds of, I could do dreams. I could be.
When did you start writing text then on your photography? When was that a thing that you discovered?
Right soon in the very beginning, because I found the photograph inadequate. If I showed you a picture of my mother, here's an early one. Picture of my mother, my father, and my brother. And they're all smiling and on it. It's a fucking lie. I mean, they didn't even like each other. They had to get married. My mother was knocked up. I did a little movie about it. It's called, you should see that movie. Look up a movie called The Rabbit Died. I hear that means somebody is pregnant illegitimately. I'm illegitimate. Oh, right. Anyway, what was I going?
That's a brand new film. That's about... The Rabbit Died is this year. That's a brand new film.
It's a new one, a new movie.
Oh, yeah. Cool.
So you were talking about a photograph of you and your father. Letter from my father. Is it that one?
That's it. That's the one.
Yeah.
So the thing is, so that shows you what the, you know, if you saw them, they put their hands around and smile. Lies. I said they didn't even like each other. They tolerated each other. So the truth is not what they look like. They had their portrait faces on. When I wrote, it says this. My father always told me that one day he would write me a very special letter, but he never told me what the letter would be about. And I used to try to guess what secret, what mystery would now be revealed, what something we would share. I knew what I had hoped to read in a letter. I wanted him to tell me where he had hidden his affection, but he died and I never found that place. So it's one thing to show, but it's his expression, it's expressive. Somebody's talking to me about doing a new book, and I said, I want to do a book called The Expressionist, because it's not about photography, it's about how well do you express what you need to say. And I paint on photographs, I've done everything on photographs, and it has nothing to do with the genre, the category. It should be dictated by what moves you, what pisses you off. To say something honest out loud is such a pleasure. I love reading. I really love reading, and I love Beckett. I enjoy it. But there's somebody who says one sentence. Here's what I wrote about. I've done a lot of things about time. Time is such a funny thing. It's like a hole inside a ring. It's always now and never then. But when I say it's now again, it's never now, but always then. I'm always here and never there. But when I go from here to there, then there is here and here is there. And if you think you're very tall, besides a tree, you're very small. And if you think you're very small, besides a bee, you're 10 feet tall. When we dream, we seem awake, but all along the dream was fake. You say you're I and also me. How can that be since I'm not you and you're not me? Time is not what you might think. It is and isn't in a wing.
God, I love that.
You know, Dwayne, for me, your work always unlocked something when I was looking at it. And there's something about dreaming and almost like the staging of your imagery that actually reveals the truth. So even though it's a kind of like a dream maybe, but I feel like when people dream, they often actually are telling themselves like what they don't tell themselves when they're awake.
And that's a whole universe. I've done a lot of things about dreaming too, but we don't exercise all our muscles. It's like going to a gym and just doing sit-ups. I'm writing something called I Was a Sexual Flop, which I think is very funny because people are always bragging about their sex life. Oh, you're hot, and blah, 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 blah. This, who and what and where and why and how. Me, I was sexual. My show didn't even leave McKeesport. Don't forget, I was born in 1932. So by 1938, we had sissies in our day. We didn't have gay people. We didn't even know what those were. And I think my Uncle Bill was gay. Anyway, that's another story. I'm looking for something to amuse you. How can I amuse them?
You're amusing us.
You're amusing us. We're just crazy in love.
When did you feel you were onto something? And did you have people like your peers telling you you can't write on photography? You can't do double exposure. All the rules.
Are you kidding? And I define photography in terms of, so when I had my first exhibit in 70 or something of sequences, Gary Winogrand, who was the leading practitioner of John Tarkowski's philosophy of photography, he defined photography. He was like Louis B. Mayer of photography. And Gary walked in and walked out, and he said, "What is this?" He said, "This isn't photography." And I wasn't quick, but I should have said, "It's not your fucking photography, but it's mine." And the truth is, photography is so accessible. It's the one thing we can all do. Everybody's taken photographs, so we don't expect so as much of it. And I've made demands on it. And I juggled all my photography balls. And and then you drop one, but that's great. I like surprises. Boo! Did I scare you? Boo! You're scared. You're scared.
I'm terrified. But having Gary Winogrand at the time lead the exhibition, like now in retrospect you're like fuck you, but at the time was that quite an upsetting experience to have someone that you revere him?
Am I not vulnerable? if you count me, do I not bleed? Of course I'm very sorry. Now you made me cry, you naughty boy. But no, really, but that didn't deter me because I had enough confidence. Oh, here's something I want to show you. Two things. There's a wonderful photograph I did called, this photograph is my proof. It's my cousin Kenny and his new bride in my grandmother's house, sitting on the bed, and she's sitting behind him, hugging him. And what I wrote was, this photograph is my proof. There was that afternoon when things were still good between us, and we were so happy. Let's see. And she embraced me, and we were so happy. It had happened. She did love me. Look, see for yourself. So that's a nice picture of them, but it's, what I'm saying is, we don't even talk. Now we're fucking divorced. I can't even stand to look at her. But look at that. We once loved each other. And here's my proof. And I was 21. And I did have pecs. And I did have hair. Look. And I did have teeth, too. I had teeth in those days. And now they were white, not yellow. Anyway. Oh, I've got a better one. I want to read you. I'm much nicer than God. This is good. But I want to read you before I forget it. It says, it was when Dennis finally died that I was much nicer than God. I never would have let Dennis suffer all those months. I never would have let him, happy and be in pain. I never even would have invented cancer in the first place. But if it is true with my petty greed and vanity are much nicer than God, then I'm in despair because somewhere there's got to be more love. I don't have enough for everybody. That's the idea, so that's what it's about.
I mean, your writing is, as well as what you're actually writing, your cursive handwriting, your text, when you see that, is so unique to you and so beautiful. Your line, your font is just genius.
Can I get that in writing? Never mind. I love handwriting. I love to read people's, I love letters. I love to see signatures. I buy books of letters by Baudelaire, and just to see the quality, it's the graphics of the hand. It's drawing. I call my writing drawing. I draw letters. I don't write letters. Mm. So when I write on something, it's drawing.
How did the sequences begin? Because we interviewed a photographer called Sunil Gupta, who I think you might know. I don't know if you've ever met him, but he's amazing. And he made
whoa, more amazing than I am?
No, you're the originator.
No.
You're the OG. There is no more amazing than Dwayne Michaels. But he was inspired by your work, Chance Meeting, which is a kind of iconic sequence. I think it's called Chance Meeting. Or maybe it's Chance Encounter.
Well, you know, Chance Meeting is the two guys walking down the street.
Yeah, exactly. So he was really inspired by that work. And he mentioned it when we interviewed him. So how did that kind of body of work, you know, where you make these sequences where there's like a number of photographs that create... Yeah, but it's almost like one moment in time that's been kind of broken up into tiny particles. I love it.
It's the decisive moment before and the moment after. And the moment, it gave me wiggle room rather than the frozen moment of somebody giving me the finger. I could do the next picture with me giving him the finger. But I mean, it frees all these writing sequences, all freed me to express myself in any way I want. But I want to read this. One thing, okay, it's called To Some Other Father's Son. I wish that I had been your mother's lover and that we had slept with one another on some summer's night so that I might claim of you the natural father's right. And the blood that pulses through your veins, I wish were mine the very same, and your strength that I can plainly see, I wish had also come from me. Would that you had issued from my fountain's joy, you sweet and sturdy smelling boy. But this is the harsh reality, that like some phantom limb, you cast no shadow from my tree. Still, we had shared what you never had with him whom you had first called dad. And at this point of this brief now, it seems correct that I somehow be at your side so that I can point and show and guide what I need to give, you do need to take. We share this living gift for both our loving sake. I love that. I think it's very sweet. Don't bother if closet father. I'm always rhyming nonsense. I wrote this too. It says the greatest, I'm complete nihilist. The greatest defense against common sense is nonsense. All these things have been to liberate me. And when I realized I could tell stories, for example, I looked at Balthus, you know, Balthus, the Swiss. He had a wonderful painting at MoMA. I hate MoMA, but I used to go visit there all the time just to look at this painting. It's a street scene. It's a fake French street, and everybody's artificially posed. They're, you know, like a guy's crossing a street with a thing on it, but it's all fake. And I was fascinated by that. So I took some friends to Brooklyn in an empty street, and I posed them based on that idea. And it didn't work. And then I realized all I had to do was to animate them. The man, there was a man with like a Magritte man with an umbrella crossing the street. He should open the umbrella, walk across the street. A guy on a motorcycle goes down the street and around the corner. A woman is reading a newspaper, and then they all walk away and the street's empty. That's where I was going. I didn't see it. I would love to reshoot it now. It kills me every time it was like latching onto that. And then I just began to make little dramas.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
But you've been more inspired by painting. You just mentioned Magritte, Balthus, Giorgio de Chirico. Painting has been your biggest inspiration more than other photography or historical photography.
Well, I always loved photography. I always loved photography. That's my nasal lie. No, I always loved photography. And then that I could actually do it. I just thought it was too technical or something. But I'm a natural, you know. As a photographer, I'm successful because I'm doing what I should be doing. It's like when Mickey Mantle was hitting baseballs and hitting home runs when he was 10. And there were those people who were, Mozart was writing music when he was writing symphony when he was 14, you know. So there are people, I found my thing. I found what I should be doing. And I took to it. And I'm very good at commercial work. You know, I'm not a fashionista, but can you imagine getting paid a lot of money to make beautiful people beautiful? Beautiful women beautiful? What's the problem? Get out of here. You know, and this whole, there were so many bad fashion photographers that went around, and tits and ass always sell. You know, you could do that.
You mentioned MoMA, but that was where your first ever exhibition was, wasn't it? Yeah. In like 1970. How did that come about?
Well, let me think for a minute. Oh, somebody told me you have to go see John Zarkowski. So I went to see him. And of course, he didn't.
Who's
at
he?
All.
Who was he?
He was the big shot, the guy who ran. He was the Louis B. Mayer of photography. He's the guy whose ass you wanted to kiss. No, he didn't want to. Should. No, he never had. Let's not go there. But so what happened was he had an assistant named Peter Benil, who was from MIT or someplace. Really smart guy, photography. And he loved the work. And that, you know, I hit the trifecta. I got a book by Doubleday. A friend of mine was going to Zurich, and I said, I had my sequence. I said, camera magazines in Zurich. You're in Zurich. Take the pictures. So he did. He took them. And they immediately gave me an issue, not a whole, but with pullouts. They did pullouts to do the sequences. And then after that came the MoMA show. And then Doubleday saw I mean, they saw the magazine with pullouts, and they called me and said, would you like to do a book on that? And you said, oh, yeah. No, it was just like that, trifecta, one after another.
It's amazing. Have you found the art world snobby at any point? Have you felt like it's not wanting to let you in, or...
I wanted to get in. I want to be in a book someplace. You know, Debbie Does Dallas. Oh, I did a very interesting gay thing I want to tell you about. There's a magazine in Australia. I think it was called Blue, B-L-U-E, or Blow, depending on which issue you got. No, but so they asked me to do something, a portfolio. So I said, when you look in a book, you see a photograph. But you don't know how that photograph got there. So I did a story about a photograph. And it starts out with, let me see. I forget how it starts out. But a guy comes and he buzzes my doorbell. And he comes in and he goes into my little workroom. And then I present my idea. I forgot what the idea was. And so I tell him the story. Then you see me set up and you see me take the picture and you see the variations. And then you see me go through the contact sheets. And then you see me go through all, and then I pick this one. And then you see that's the one's published. So it's how that, it's the story of how a picture got on a page. And because I look at photographs and I think, gee, what were the circumstances? How did that happen? There's a photograph I always loved. I thought it was so erotic and beautiful. It was in a farmhouse, and coming through a door was this young guy, and he was on crutches, and I think he was just in his underwear or something. It was so beautiful, and the fact that he was wounded perfection. I just, what do you think?
Yeah. What was it like being a queer man throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and being a photographer? Was there stages where you felt like you had to hide who you were, or you felt like you were more confident to be who you were? Was it a really kind of scary at times situation to be in?
Well, no, I wasn't really. Here's what happened. In every category, I'm an anomaly. I'm the surprise in the package. Not at all typical. So when I was in McKeesport, we only had sissies in high school. And in my senior year, I fell in love with Jack Donahue, and he fell in love with me. And but we didn't know what that was at all. I had no idea what it was. I was dating Sue Mathis. And, I had no idea. And then when I went to school, I did everything on scholarships and stuff like that. So I went to school in Denver on a scholarship by accident. Being an accident, they gave it to me. They had to. So then what happened was, little by little, I began to realize that I was in love with my friends. And I dated Helen McDonald. She thought we were getting married. Ooh, big mistake. And anyways, we're still friends. Then I came to New York and I went to Parsons. I didn't know where to go. I wanted to be in books and magazines, and I thought I could learn how to. That didn't work. I dropped out. But I found I was gravitating. My friends, nobody would admit it, but we all would look out the window at a hot guy, hot. Psst. And it just, I just evolved, but I have nothing to do with it. It's fine. But I'm not interested in drag. I don't think drag's funny. I went to Fire Island. I hadn't been there in 60 years. I mean, a long time. I went there last summer. I was bored out of my mind. I was sitting around talking about gay talk, really, of course I like to talk gay talk. I use me and he, and stuff like that. But so I've always been I've also been the outsider in photography. It's just, when I was 14, I read in the local newspaper. My dad was a steel worker in Pittsburgh, in a little town. We had no social credentials. Oh, let me tell you this. There were two DNAs. My physical DNA said I was Caucasian. I was white. I would be 5'8", my highest. I would be skinny because I come from a slim family. And my social DNA said that we were Catholics. Dad worked in the mill, for free. I went to Catholic school. I dated Loretta Petrick. I liked her. And predictably, I should have married Loretta, but I didn't. So I just kept. And then I read you could go to Texas. So I went to Texas and with Jimmy Cunningham. And you could work on a wheat crop. That was insanity. Took a bus and hitchhiked from Amarillo up to the border. And at 14, I was 5'7". if I stood really tall and weighed 100 pounds. So all the migrant workers were there, and I went to this county seat where you had to go to get the job. And the guy said to me, "Listen, kid, you have to shovel wheat all day in the hot sun. You wouldn't last for 10 minutes. And then I was sleeping outside on the lawn with all these migrant workers doing things I didn't know human beings could do to each other. And animals, can you imagine? Oh, Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, yes, protect me. But I was saved because the last night there, this guy from a high school teacher from California was there with his son. And they did this all the time, and they had a big station wagon. They were big guys. And they saw me sleeping on the grass, so they gave me a sleeping bag, and that helped. Anyway, it's been like that.
Right, yeah, I mean... I'm trying to follow that train of thought, but I love it, and I feel like you've been someone that has been proudly queer and has really made a big impact on so many photographers and so many artists in general. And what does that feel like to know, like Rob asked at the beginning, to know that you are such an influence? And do you like people telling you how much you've made them like rethink careers?
No, it's nice. It's a novelty item, and that's nice. But, you know, that's not part of my, I don't think about those things. I tell you, when we do work all the time, and Josiah will tell you that the only thing I really wanted was work on what problem we're solving, what thing we're doing. That to me is the greatest exit. It's nice to have somebody say, "I like your, you know, okay, good. I'll go do it."
Since 2015, you've been focusing predominantly on short films.
Yes.
How did that come about? And can you talk about some of your kind of favorite ones? Have you got any special film?
Josiah, you know, as I said earlier, when the pupil's ready, the teacher will appear when I needed help. I did everything by myself, and I would have an occasional assistant. I was very much a loner, and Fred died. And I was in disarray, and Josiah showed up. And Josiah said, "We should make movies." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, you know, this camera, we can make a movie." I said, "Get out of here." And we're the perfect match because he does all the computer stuff I can't do. But he knows what to do. So we'll be working, and I'll say, "Gee, Josiah, why don't we make that upside down?" He said, "Okay." Upside down. "No, really." And then he says, "Well, let's make the whole thing. I'm making that. Let's burn it down. We'll burn it down." No, he has liberated me. He does what I can do. And that's why, we've made so many. I did a wonderful movie about Fred. It's called The End. It'll make you cry. Makes me cry. What else did we do? We do so many of them. We did about 50 films now.
So your partner, Fred, did you work together as well? Was he a photographer?
No, he was an architect. He worked for Marcel Breuer and Skidmore. We met at the gym. I'm in such good shape because I worked out for 40 years. I'm built like a brick turd. No, brick shit house. One of those. That effect. What is that? Yes, you did. Shut up. We were very much in sync. We both had a farm in the country, and he did the old farmhouse. We had 175 acres near Bennington, Vermont. And we evolved. All relationships evolve. You might want to know this. And that is that after the first 7 years, which is, you know, anywhere you will go, I will go with you. Oh, he called. You know, as a matter of fact, we broke up, and I was uptown, and I was coming around the corner, and he was coming around the corner, chance meeting. We practically collided. And I remember... I looked at him and I thought, "Oh my God, wow!" It was like ba boom, ba dum, 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 ba dum. It was fantastic, but after 7 years, you know the nook of every nook and cranny of each other's English muffin, you know, and so we worked it out, and we had a nice relationship, and we evolved, and we had leeways, and we had problems, but. And at the end, I would say the last 7 years when he was dying were the deepest part of our relationship. I was totally marinated in him. Every morning did he poop? Does he have a rash? Can he stand up? You know, it was just completely, and I couldn't cry. I kept thinking, I bet I'd feel better if I could cry. And also my friends rallied around me. We had a great gay support system. But when Fred died, I began to cry. for an hour. I mean, I was tsunami. I could not stop. I kept thinking, I can't stop crying. I'm walking around the rooms, crying. It was just this emotions, my body and the tears took over. And yeah, so that was that. But you have to see the end, really.
Yeah, we will. And when did you make the end then? Is that more recent?
No, about 2019, I had a wonderful exhibit at the Morgan Library here, my favorite museum. And we just got it finished in time to show at the opening of the show at the museum. It was a very nice show. Let's see. Look up Yort, Y-O-R-T, which is a nonsense. There were so many. Oh, look up, Are You Still a Faggot?
I was about to say, that was one I was going to mention, because Are You Still a Faggot is amazing.
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that one?
It's about me as an old man, and my grandson, or I forget, comes in, and he's gay. To make a long story short, I told him, don't come back until I do this whole diatribe, and I dump all over him about being a fag. And at the very end, he brought me a gift. It's a lady's hat. And at the very end, when he leaves, I'm really pissed and angry and all that. And I'm sitting there, and I began looking at the woman's hat. And I put it on my head and smile. You have to see that. It's funny.
And what about Hobgoblin's Garden?
Oh, yeah, that Hobgoblin's Garden. I went up to Maine to teach a class, and I said to the students, Friday, the last day of the class, I'm going to make a movie with you, so bring funny clothes. And we did the thing in like an hour and a half, and we made it up on the spot. It was fun.
Totally improvised.
Yeah, totally improvised. I told you I'm from a little town called McKeesport, which is a still town. I love McKeesport. I love Pittsburgh. I think it's an amazing city. I would live there if I had some reason to live there. But it's all falling down. I mean, the population was 55,000 when I left. I was 17. And it's filled with druggies and houses that are caving in and stuff. So two things are going to happen. One is I want to build a sculpture there. It's called the McKeesport Pipe Palace. They used to make oil pipes in McKeesport, and it's going to be made out of pipes. And it's going to be in where we used to live. I want that to be a woods. And you'll see these. It'll look like Emerald City in Wizard of Oz. And it's going to be a destination. It's where, children need memories. When I was a kid, I remember at night, the steel mills, the skies were always yellow from the furnaces and the smoke and the cooing and the drama and the praise. And there's no magic in McKeesport. See, children, you have magic, and then magic becomes your memories, and then memories become the myths that you live by when you're old. You say, remember the steel mills, And so they have no magic. So I want to give them a magic, and this is a place for them to go. And the only problem is it costs a lot of money, and I'm very bad about money. So I thought about
it. What do you mean you're bad about money? You're not good at holding on to it, or?
No, I just don't care about it.
What has been one of your greatest achievements so far for you then? What do you look back on with your most pride?
Adventures. Everything's been adventure. When I went to Egypt, I did a book for a French publisher. I built my own pyramid.
That's so weird. I have the page of that open, and I was, you're psychic. I'm literally about to say, I Build a Pyramid is one of my favorite works by you. That is so weird.
Yeah, I know. And I thought Napoleon soldiers went there and all this, everybody's photographed the pyramids, but nobody's built their own pyramid. And the reason I did it was because when I was a kid, I used to build model cities. I build model cities. In the country, I used to build model cities in our parking lot. And then people would park on them, and I stopped doing them. But I like to make little constructions.
And I love the sequence of I Build a Pyramid. It's just genius.
Yeah. I think,
and it's kind of funny, but it's also really profound and deep because of time and history and all of these things.
But with the real pyramids behind me. You see?
Yeah, exactly.
My pyramid, which is bigger than theirs.
I think my favorite sequence is Grandpa Goes to Heaven. And it starts off and it feels quite an ominous photograph. And there's a little boy and he's opposite the bed where there's this old man who looks like he's dead. And suddenly the old man sits up and he's got like child wings, like Tinkerbell on. And it suddenly becomes very funny. And he kind of climbs out the window and he waves back at the little boy. And suddenly it becomes so beautiful and moving and friendly. And like as a kid, if you'd see them images, you'd feel moved and inspired by them. You wouldn't be fearful of death. It's a really wonderful gift making that series.
Well, the thing about that series is that was a guy named Lyman White. When Fred and I first moved to the country in our little local news, farm newspaper, there was a wonderful letter to the editor, very liberal, very Democrat in a Republican area, by a guy named Lyman White. And I always remember that name. Then years later, somebody said to me that they live next door to Lyman White. I said, whoa, Lyman White, did he? And then I used to, when I did something called the Seven Ages of Man, he's in that too. So when I used Lyman in that picture, when we showed he loved that series, that was his nephew, a little boy. And when Lyman died, they showed the little boy that photo, that series, and the little boy loved it. You know, yeah. So if straight photographers photograph death, they'll photograph women crying, funerals, corpses, you know, that sort of thing. Those are the facts. It's not what death feels like, what it looks like. And I always think you should photograph what something feels like, not what it looks like.
How often do you write? You know, talking to you in this interview, we've talked about photography, but I felt like we've sort of skirted around photography and we've really gone in depth with your text and your short stories and your poetry. How often are you with a notebook
almost
making?
On a daily basis. If I think of something, I'll immediately write it down. I go into it. I like we'll be doing something and Josiah will say, we should write a few lines with that. And I love that. I write more than I take photographs, actually. And
it seems like it. It seems like it's a real, expression. Real passion for you. Yeah.
It's about expression and saying something out loud and, you know, saying I love you or I don't love you. I miss you. I don't miss you. I don't know. It's that's what being alive is all about, is feeling, not describe, feeling. Anyway.
You know when you did the overpainted photographs, there's a series where you have like three people, so there's three women, three men, and then it has text painted on top.
Yeah.
That series I was so fascinated by because it's so modern and so kind of like I'd never seen it before. It's like such an odd image, but it's so sort of futuristic at the same time. Can you explain that? Because I love the ones where they say like bye. But it's all like completely different meanings.
It's about how we talk, but we don't understand each other. There's such confusion. He says, I love you. And he thinks he's getting fucked and she thinks she's getting married. I mean, so there's three men saying the word bye, but it's three versions of bye. And the other three words are three women.
Two and two.
So if I find anything interesting, I'll write it. I'll do it. It's just, I have no inhibitions.
I think for people listening to you, Dwayne, that they're going to be really inspired that you have really been affirmative in the fact that you are a self-taught artist and you've had this incredible career and this massive impact on so many people, and you taught yourself and you've always been very proud. And I'm sure at the time when you were making art, there was a period in history where there would have been a snobbery against that you hadn't gone through the academic routes to get to where you are. But that is something so brilliant for people to know.
No, I didn't travel in snobby crowds. We didn't circulate like that. I didn't need the kindness of strangers to do what I wanted to do. I was very much my own person. It never occurred to me to say, what do you think of this or whatever. I just did what I did. And I amused myself as usual. And I found myself very much touched by certain feelings, and if nobody else felt it, so what? I mean, it's that's their problem. I don't think about things like that. I could see why you would ask those questions, but they're not relevant.
There's an amazing quote of yours where you said, "I'm not jumping on any bandwagon. I've always been my own parade."
That's good.
That's yours. Write that down.
And I just want to share this one photograph because I love it so much. Okay. I'm driving down the road in the country, and in the distance I could see yellow, and I thought, what the hell's that? And so I came around the bend, and it was a field of sunflowers.
Oh wow, and beautiful! So,
this is one of my favorite country models, and what I wrote said, Van Gogh carried a ladder into a field of sunflowers, leaned it against the cloud, and climbed to heaven.
That's nice.
That's beautiful.
Isn't it beautiful? Oh,
yeah.
So we ask every guest two questions, Dwayne. Oh. The first is, if you could do an imaginary art heist and take home any artwork from around the world, what would you take and why?
Oh, I would take Hieronymus Bosch's Garden of Earthly Delights.
And why? I love because that work. I've seen that in Madrid.
It's stunning. It's everything I admire in an artist. It's imagination. It's contradiction. It's beautifully painted. It's theatrical. This is theater right now. It's theatrical. And it makes me want more. It whets my appetite and my pants.
What is your favorite color, Dwayne?
Blue.
Why blue?
Why not? I don't know why blue. Because it's just the sky's blue. And every now and then I get blued. That what? Code is coded. Did you get the code? You break the code?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Yeah. What is the best advice you've ever received when it comes to your art?
That's really good. We'll hire you. No, I don't care about selling work. This is what I've missed, actually. Because my father and I had a difficult relationship, we didn't have a relationship at all. I'll tell you one last story about that. When he was very sick, I went back to McKeesport to the hospital to see him, and we had our usual silly conversation, you know, don't pinch the nurses and blah, 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 and get better. And I'm thinking, well, I'm leaving now. I should say, you've been a great dad. I love you, blah, blah. And then I'm on the plane. I thought, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you tell him that? Why didn't you? And I said, I know he didn't say it to me either. We had never shared that. We never had that relationship. I would have loved if once my dad or an older man put his arm on my shoulder and said, gee, Dwayne, that's really nice. I like that. Did you do that? That's really good. Never. No. So I'm good at doing that. Putting my hand on my own shoulder and telling me how good I am.
So you give yourself advice or you pat yourself on the back.
The big thing is do it. And don't be afraid of failing. Failing is a reward because you can, as I said, you'll grow from failure. But if you do the same thing, the same picture over and over and over with variation, you know, you're turning out a product. That's why I don't like the art world. It's all about business and art personalities. And really, I showed a Sidney Janis for a long time. And there was a painter named Robert Ryman who did white on white canvases forever, ad nauseum. And so I was having a show and I said, what's the next exhibit? And he showed me it's somebody else was doing white on white canvases. I said, oh, what's the difference between this white on white and that white on white? He said, this white on white has 30 layers of white paint. 30, not 29. You know, his personal best was actually 28. Now he made 30. What do I care? I mean, you have to be touched. You have to, it's not about making it. I hate big photographs. All those guys who do those big, you know, like parking lots in Tokyo, but they fill up a side of a building. The art world loves them because they look like art paintings. Paintings have to be big. I love intimacy. I loved Mickey Rooney, Toulouse-Lautrec, small people.
You've met so many artists, then. You just talked about Robert Ryman. And who has been the most kind of fascinating artist you've ever met?
Oh, a couple. Magritte, of course. De Chirico.
Oh, wow.
Saul Balthus. I photographed Joseph Cornell. I photographed my favorite artist. But with De Chirico, I was so intimidated by him. I wasn't functioning because what do you tell De Chirico? Sit over there, you know, please. And then one night, there's a restaurant. Robert Frank, who's my favorite photographer, was in the restaurant with his wife, and he asked me to have dinner with them. And I said, no. People said, are you crazy? Why'd you say? I said, what am I going to say to Robert Frank? You know, you're good. Well, great. Nice. Big. Good. Terrific. I mean, how do I talk to, see, I'm full of myself. I'm like a stuffed cabbage. And what if I went there and they had stuffed cabbage on the menu? What would I do? I'd have to order it and photograph it. No, but what could I possibly say? It's like sitting next to Einstein, you know. You're smart. Smart. Very smart. Yeah, I'm intimidated by it, believe it or not.
You know, something that I've really loved in your work as well is the kind of cycle of life. And I feel like you're very prolific work over the past 65 years really does cover so many aspects of what it is to be a human and the kind of life cycle. Like even your very famous photo, like the Seven Ages of Man, where you've gone from like a baby all the way to the grandfather, and you've got all these different kind of guys, you know, that kind of like journey. Or things like the Illuminated Man, yeah, where you've got the kind of spiritual element too.
I did Kundalini for 8 years, and it got out of hand. It was taking over. So I stopped doing it. But when you have illumination, you vanish. That's it. That's really about illumination. You know, and illumination is when you take a poop and turn into white light.
Well, on that note, which is a great way to wrap up here.
If you come to New York, do come by and we'll talk and I'll take your picture.
Oh, that would be amazing, Dwayne. Okay. That would be so amazing. It'd be a real honor to do that. And for everybody listening, Dwayne, do you know if you have an Instagram? Do you have an Instagram account? Is that something that people can find you on?
Somebody took my name, so I am the Dwayne Michaels. There's a Dwayne Michaels and I'm the.
All right, we'll follow you.
And for everybody, you're the one and only.
For everybody listening, go to at the Dwayne Michaels, and then also go to at Talk Art, and you can see images of all the works we've been discussing today.
And also there's an amazing Vimeo channel, which has loads and loads. I think something like 51 or 52 films that Dwayne's been making, which is just vimeo.com/Dwayne Michaels. And honestly, it's such a wonderful experience. You can watch all these short films and they're incredible. And also there's so many books, but one of my favorite is called The Essential Dwayne Michaels, which you very kindly posted to us maybe a year ago and signed to us. So thank you for that beautiful book. I think it's from like 2009, maybe. It's quite an old book. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much. Well, everybody listening,
we love you, Dwayne.
This has been brilliant, and you've been incredible, Dwayne. Thank you so much for coming.
Now I am flattered. I think I'll go look at myself for a while.
You should. You're looking hot, Dwayne. You should definitely go and check yourself out.
Oh, love that. We'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram at Talk Art, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.